Hey team, thank you for tuning in to another episode of 2420, the podcast that delivers 20th Air Force information in about 20 minutes. I am Captain Emily Seaton from 20th Air Force Public Affairs, and this episode is a continuation of our Missile Community Cancer Study series. In this episode, Colonel Deb Davidson and Lieutenant Colonel Josh Berg give their perspective as medical professionals on how members current and past can discuss the study and their concerns with their primary care providers, the types of information doctors take into account when providing care, and what a longitudinal exposure record is. This episode is a little over 20 minutes because they had a lot of great information to share, so let's dive in.
Hello, Sentinel Warriors. I'm Major General Mike Letton, the 20th Air Force Commander. I'm joined by Colonel Deb Davidson, the 90th Medical Group Commander, and Lieutenant Colonel Josh Berg, the Chief of Medical Staff at the 90th Medical Group. And we're excited to have them here. This is part two of our 20 for 20 on the cancer study. Part one was with Colonel Woodard, our USAF SAMS commander. And I wanted to kick off the conversation with Colonel Davidson. And Colonel Davidson, can you just talk to the capabilities that the medical group has today to make sure our airmen and their families are the healthiest they can be?
Well, good morning, sir, and thank you for having us. So really, we want to have a conversation with our airmen, guardians, retirees, and their families, anybody that might have a concern, whether it's related to the community cancer study or not. As far as what our capabilities are, we can talk to them about their individual risk factors, sort through what those might be, what their family history looks like, as well as environmental exposures that they may have. So we encourage anybody that has any questions or concerns to call the appointment line and make an appointment with their PCM to come in and discuss that. And then if they would prefer to book online, www.tricareonline.com is another avenue that they can reach us.
What should they state when they're booking an appointment or they're talking to their PCM? Like, how should they characterize that? If I'm an airman as a lieutenant or a senior airman, maintenance professional or defender, and I've gotten the news about the cancer study, what should I put down? How should I begin that conversation with my primary care provider?
Well, certainly if they're having any symptoms, we want to know what the symptoms would be. But if it's just questions, they can absolutely say they just want to make an appointment to talk about their risk factors and how it relates to the cancer study.
And Colonel Berg, what would some of those symptoms be?
So it's a difficult question, sir, because a lot of times cancer, the symptoms depend on where it's located. You know, unfortunately, with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, the symptoms tend to be what we call generalized and are also explained by a lot of other medical conditions. But some of the more common symptoms would include night sweats, unexplained fevers, unexplained chills, unexplained weight loss. If the cancer is located in the stomach, you can have GI symptoms, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. If the cancer is located in the chest, you can have chest pain, you can have difficulty breathing. You also can have some lumps, what we call enlarged lymph nodes all over your body, typically in the neck area, in the armpit area, or even in the groin area.
And then if one has those symptoms, clearly they're going to go to their primary care provider. And would that be something that we can test for? So if symptoms present, is there a test for those symptoms?
You know, unfortunately, there's no what we call screening tests. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard that. A screening test is something that's designed to pick up a diagnosis or medical condition in an asymptomatic individual. When you are symptomatic and you have symptoms, we can order a whole array of tests that will look into what your symptoms are being caused by, whether it's blood tests, radiological tests. We kind of let the history, your individual history, your work exposure, and then your symptoms kind of tell us the path that we need to go and what tests we need to order.
And you mentioned non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Can you explain what that is, just for our listeners?
Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is a term that we use to describe a diverse collection of cancers of the lymphatic system. Now, it gets a little complicated because many listeners may not know what the lymphatic system is. The way I like to look at it is it's a part of our immune system that helps us fight off infections and regulate the body fluid. You can kind of think of it as a body drainage system that is, you know, made up of a lot of different organs, such as our spleen, such as the thymus. It's made up of collecting ducts, we call lymphatic ducts, and then actual filters, which are lymph nodes that filter out bacteria, viruses, and help fight them off. Cancer occurs when some of our normal cells mutate and they begin to replicate. They grow out of control. And these cells grow and grow and grow. They can form into a tumor, which is just kind of a big lump under our skin. And sometimes those tumors become so aggressive that they spread to other parts of our body, which we call metastasis. In non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, the cells that are actually growing out of control is our lymphocytes that are part of that lymphatic system.
Colonel Davidson, you mentioned risk factors. Can you talk to the other risk factors that may be affecting airmen?
So risk factors for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
In general, risk factors.
So, well, there are so many environmental things that we aren't necessarily focusing on. I would like to talk about risks that people take. So if you smoke, if you use smokeless tobacco, if you vape, if you drink energy drinks and you don't know what you're consuming and read your labels, those can all contribute to problems within our system. I think Colonel Berg could probably speak more specifically if we're talking about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
And unfortunately, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is one of the more common cancers. I believe it's the seventh most common cancer in the United States. A lot of the symptoms that are the risk factors that we know are associated with it is the male sex in general. One in 43 males will eventually develop non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, where it's one in 53 females. Being older.
And if age, I could just stop. Mm-hmm. That's one in 43 and one in 53, just fact, statistically, across the population of the United States?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
General population.
Yes, sir. General population.
Not okay. Our population specifically.
So how would you qualify that statistic? Because that's a new statistic I think airmen are hearing. And I would submit that our general population in the military is healthier than most and is likely healthier than the general population of this country. May not be always that way, and you mentioned some risk factors, Colonel Davidson, but how does that 1 in 43, 1 in 53 correlate to a military population? Regardless of service, right? So if you're a Marine, a soldier, a sailor, a guardian, an airman.
It's fairly similar, sir. You know, one of the things I would like to emphasize about that statistic is within your whole lifetime. So another risk factor is getting older. As you get older, you're more likely to develop non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Other risk factors include being Caucasian, immunocompromised. There are certain viruses that can cause that immunocompromise where our immune system isn't as strong and leads us more likely to get non-Hodgkin lymphoma. But it is much more common as we get a little bit older.
When we look at risk factors, can you both talk to family health and family health history and how that contributes to an airman, guardian, or veteran's risk factors?
Yes, sir. It's a good question. It's absolutely one of the most important risk factors out there. If you have a first-degree relative with a history of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or most of the cancers, then you're going to be at a higher risk, and your screening factors may even change. So it kind of goes back to the most important thing, which is be very open and honest and tell everything you can think of to your primary care provider so they can act in an educated fashion.
And so does that knowledge affect the primary care provider about how that primary care provider supports the airman?
Absolutely, sir. The way it does, it just puts you into different screening categories for different disease processes.
Okay.
So when you have that higher risk, a lot of times your screening will begin sooner rather than later based on your family history.
And when we look at that family history, what should airmen be having that conversation about with their family, you know, their parents, fathers, mothers? What is it they should be having a dialogue with them on?
I think the most important thing, just from my experience, is having the dialogue. So many patients out there have no clue what their family members have had. Some of the questions that I typically ask my patients are, is any cancers in the family, any genetic conditions, any deaths below, you know, before the age of 55? Those are kind of like red flags for us. And usually we kind of look at the first degree relatives. So that's pretty much mom, dad, brother, sister, child, and then maybe to the second degree relatives, which would be your grandparent.
I would also refer them to the website for the Missile Community Cancer Study. It has a lot of resources for talking about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, what it is, what it means to you. So they can easily find those on that website instead of trying to Google non-Hodgkin's lymphoma themselves. It's on the website for them.
Absolutely.
When you look at that information that you have, family history, when you look at the environment that the airman is working in, and then the honest dialogue the airman is having with the primary care provider, From your perspective, how does that change the support of the airmen? Will you see an increased periodicity of potentially testing? Will you see an increased periodicity of engagement? What does that mean when all this is put together from a medical professional perspective, and how is that presented to our airmen?
And that's why I keep kind of going back to this. It's so important to see your primary care provider because they're the experts in you. And that expertise comes from that whole picture that's painted with your family history, your environmental history, your symptoms, your age, your risk factors. And then based on that, it puts you into a category for whatever disease process we're talking about, which then defines how often you get your labs done, how often you get your screenings done for those cancers that can be screened.
Because if you do have those familial risk factors, we might increase your screening. Instead of waiting 10 years for one of the screenings, we might say, okay, now we want to do it at 3 years or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And then for Colonel Davidson, so I'm an airman. I'm supported by your medical group. This is a personal testimony. I think the support's been amazing, in large part to your leadership. So thank you for that. So when I show up at the clinic and when I'm meeting my primary care provider, how long is this going to take? So is it, I go online and make my first appointment, and then I have to have a follow-up appointment, and then at follow-up appointment, I may have a battery of tests. So how long before I actually get feedback after I begin to engage with the medical community?
Yes, sir. So thank you for your kind words, first of all. I think it would depend on exactly what it is that we're seeing you for. I can tell you that access to be seen right now is phenomenal. If you're an active duty member, we have great access for you to get in. So depending on what tests we need to run, if you're having symptoms, if there's something that we think you need to be tested for, and whether it's our lab that would send those things out or our radiology department versus do we need to send you downtown? And then, of course, follow up if there's any unusual findings. It could range from a couple of weeks, maybe to a month if we're talking about lab testing from inside versus outside our facility. Radiology, if we perform that study, it's done same day, and we have a radiologist in Colorado Springs that reads for us, so that should be less than a 24-hour turnaround. If there's something abnormal and concerning, our providers should be calling immediately upon receipt of those results.
Okay.
Routine, like if it's negative, we're not concerned, that might take a little bit longer for us to get back to, but please give us send us a message. You can put in a TCON asking for your results, or you can go online. The portal is great. Our response time is very short if you put in a question to the team on our portal.
And what is TCON?
So it's just a telephone consult.
Oh, telephone consult.
Yes, sir. Okay. You can call the appointment line and say, okay, I need to leave a question for my provider. I just want to ask a question, and then they'll put that into the team and someone will get back to them.
So we talked about an airman that she or he may have a concern right now based on information they're reading or hearing about the cancer study. But let's pivot and talk to an airman that's just going to their annual physical health assessment. What's that conversation? What are the organizations within the medical group that support that airman? For example, bioenvironmental engineer is a presence that has a working relationship with the medical group. So if I'm a maintainer and I work in an industrial environment, what type of conversation should I be having with my primary care provider to ensure all the documentation is correct about me so my primary care provider knows that I work in this industrial environment?
I think the important thing is to just be comprehensive, open, and honest with your primary care provider. That's where it starts. We do have public health facilities and the bioenvironmental shop that will work closely with flight medicine and our active duty clinics to correlate all those of the information and necessary work exposures or potential work exposures, you know, once you kind of let your primary care provider know what you do. Bioenvironmental shop, they actually can keep a log of something called the longitudinal exposure record, where they can compile potential exposures that you've had, and they're in constant communication with your provider when symptoms arise or when just that typical annual visit occurs. That documentation, it can also be accessed by the VA once you eventually transition to that side of the military medicine.
How do our airmen account for that record to make sure that that record stays with them?
Yes, sir. It does follow you throughout your Air Force career. And if you're not sure, you can always visit your bioenvironmental shop and they can confirm, and if not, reach out to your previous bases to obtain it. Of course, unfortunately, sometimes there are hiccups in the system, and being vigilant with your own medical record and exposure record is always something that we would recommend.
What is the authoritative piece of paper that the airman needs to show up to say, I've been exposed to this, or this is my industrial environment that I'm working in? Please log this into the longitudinal exposure record.
So just based on their work location, that would be an automatic. Nobody's going to question that. And we have record of that in your medical record that tells us what shop you belong to. I would like to add that if someone feels like they work in a shop that they're exposed to something that they shouldn't be and it's not being tracked, please let our public health office know, because they will come and do a shop visit and make that assessment and see if that shop needs to be placed on the rotation to make sure that they're meeting the industrial standards.
So for senior enlisted leaders and commanders, say squadron commanders and squadron senior enlisted leaders, they can engage with the bioenvironmental shop for visits to work centers to make an assessment to ensure that that assessment reflects the current industrial environment that those airmen work in.
Yes, sir. So we get calls all the time. Bio gets reached out to directly. So if there's a MAF that has concerns, they will call and bio will either talk them through it or respond. But for occupational exposures, our public health shop would probably be another route to go. Maybe preferred, those two work hand in hand together. So public health and bioenvironmental communicate daily. So they can reach out to either one, and if they need to be redirected, we're a very small building, so easily found.
Excellent. And as our airmen continue to serve at FE Warren, there'll be a time in their career where they're going to execute a permanent change of station. Well, they'll leave FE Warren. How does that transfer from an intercontinental ballistic missile base, let's say, to developmental education at Air University? These medical records go to them, but they should continue this conversation with that provider, even though they're not at a nuclear base. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I actually believe it's more important at that point, because the providers may be less aware, may have less intel. So by kind of bringing it up with your primary care provider once you leave the global strike, it's going to kind of jog that memory in the provider to reach out to their support, you know, support community as well.
And then we talked earlier about the constituents that your medical group supports. And one of those constituents are veterans. So can we speak to the veterans and what type of healthcare we can expect to provide to those veterans, given what we're learning right now about the cancer study?
Yes, sir, absolutely. And they're a big part of everything. Once you separate from the military or retire, you kind of transition into the veteran health system. And we're in very open communications with them and frequently relay that information. The longitudinal exposure record will be transferable to the VA so that it becomes a part of their system.
Do you anticipate challenges if I'm a veteran that served at base X from this time period to that time period, but it wasn't during this cancer study, and I come to the clinic that now where I'm retired and say, I was assigned to base X and I was a missile maintainer, or I was a defender, or I was an operator, or I was a facility manager, and I'm concerned I might have been exposed. How does that process work?
The provider from the VA would take all that into consideration in combination with your symptoms. Once again, there's unfortunately no screening test. So if you're not having any symptoms, that information would likely be entered into your medical record for the future if you ever do develop those symptoms. If you're having symptoms, that would definitely be something they would consider when determining the next step in your treatment care.
And in that treatment care for our veterans and active duty members, we talked about many risk factors. Colonel Davidson, you mentioned smoking, vaping, those type of things. I think it's more easily understandable for the audience to comprehend tests that may be done to determine the effects of those risks. If I'm an airman or a veteran airman, are there any tests, preventative tests, preemptive tests that I can be doing now, communicating with my primary care provider that says, hey, I would like this blood work done, or I would like these types of tests done? I know we talked earlier about there is no test for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but are there other tests that are airmen, guardians, or veterans should add to their normal battery of tests that they receive in their annual physical?
Nothing, sir, that's not already a part of their annual examination. And anytime we see a patient, we take all of the information given to us, any past histories of exposure to chemicals, your past medical history, your past family history, your individual risk factors, and we kind of use that to, you know, put pieces of a puzzle together to try to figure out what's going on. And we use those to make our decisions. Anytime we make a decision in medicine, there is a chance to do harm to the patient, and then there's a benefit of the test that we're ordering. And we kind of weigh that like a scale to decide if it's worth doing the test. You know, an example is anytime you have a simple cold, whether it be a URI, we call it upper respiratory infection, COVID, if we send blood tests while you're acutely ill, the results of those blood tests can look eerily similar to cancer. And once we order that test, we now have these results that we have to follow up. And that follow-up can potentially lead to harming you when it would have been better just to give you a few days to see if the symptoms resolve in the first place. It's more important, in my opinion, to stick to the presentations that you have and the normal screenings that we typically do, whether it be a colonoscopy and other, you know, typical screenings that are recommended by the authorities.
My advice would be don't defer those screenings. Like, don't go, oh, yes, I don't need my mammogram this year. I don't need my colonoscopy this year. If it's recommended based on your age and your risk factors, then absolutely have it done. Don't defer. I would like to add to that. So if somebody's concerned in particular about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma because they worked in this community, don't assume that your provider knows that that's your history. So be sure to provide that. Don't hold back. Don't make assumptions about what your provider may or may not know. If you're concerned, you're there because you think that you've been exposed to something and you want specific information about that, make sure your provider has all of the background that would be pertinent to that.
And Colonel Davidson, the work exposure record can assist with that, but also the word of the member to their primary care provider is sufficient, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, nobody's going to doubt that you worked with missiles. So.
Okay. And then pivoting back to our active duty members that are operating either in the missile complex or on the main base, what resources are available for squadron commanders and senior enlisted leaders for squadron all calls that can further underscore information about bioenvironmental health, about medical health? What resources are out there, Colonel Davidson, for those squadron commanders and senior enlisted leaders?
They just need to reach out to us and we'd be happy to come out and talk to their folks. We did hold a couple of town halls this past year. We had our SGP, the head of flight medicine, bioenvironmental was there, public health was there. We had the whole team came out to answer questions and support. But if individual squadrons would like presentations, just let us know.
And we talked briefly about bioenvironmental engineer and that team. Colonel Davidson, can you describe what that team brings to the installation, what services they provide, what support they provide?
Yeah, so they make sure that our drinking water is safe. As far as the capsules go, they go and do air sampling. They assisted USAF SAM this last go-round with all of the environmental samples, air, water, soil. And then the next go-round, so it's going to be quarterly, they will obtain samples, and then after that they're going to be on their own. They'll be obtaining the samples by themselves, shipping those off to the individual labs.
And then the samples, after they're taken, after they're analyzed, how is that information published? Just day to day, how is that information published outside of the USAF SAMS cancer study? Where can our airmen and their families go on FE Warren or Minot or Malmstrom or Kirtland to find out what the quality of the drinking water?
Yeah, so we every year publish a consumer confidence report. So that's given to the wing commander, all the group commanders. So that includes our public drinking water, which is here on base, as well as what's out at the MAPS. So if anybody would like that, I can share it with them. I know I'm pretty sure PA put it out when it was published just last year, but we can certainly make that more widely available.
You both have been involved with the USAF SAMS cancer study since its inception at the beginning of the year. As you look at that, what areas do you believe are areas that our airmen need to get more information about? In other words, the information may be out there, but it may be not making it to our airmen. Are there any areas that you see as medical professionals that we need to re-emphasize information flow to our airmen?
I absolutely think everybody should go on and check out that website so they can see what's available. It's being updated on a regular basis. And it's an opportunity for people to ask questions about the study. They will add questions to the frequently asked questions section of that website. And so they might think of something that nobody else has. And so they should ask those questions.
Excellent. Colonel Burke?
I think the other important thing is just to make sure they're getting those annual screenings. They're getting that annual exam. Very often people go behind on their screenings, their IMR tests, and staying fit. You know, obesity is another risk factor. Doing all the healthy things can actually help keep your risks low. Eat healthy, exercise, practice safe sex, do all the things that medical communities preach all the time, because that's your best chance at keeping yourself away from these unfortunate disease processes.
And leverage our resources. We have a dietitian that's at the gym that is wide open to them. So if they want to come and talk about what can they do to improve their diet and get healthier.
We really appreciate your time. Colonel Davidson, do you have any concluding comments or thoughts?
I would just like to encourage everybody to reach out to us if they have questions, if they have concerns, if they just want to sit down and have a conversation, we're happy to do so.
Thank you so much for your time. Colonel Berg, any concluding thoughts?
No, sir. Thank you for having us.
You bet.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of 2420. Hopefully the discussion helped answer your questions about how to engage with your medical care provider. As Colonel Davidson mentioned, we highly encourage everyone to check out the MISL Community Cancer Study website that is located on airforcemedicine.af.mil. You can simply Google MISL Community Cancer Study and it should pop right up for further information, updates, and to ask questions. See you next time.